Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Those of us meeting up with family this holiday season could also be getting back together with sisters and brothers. In some cases, these reunions have adult siblings reverting back to old roles and routines, and even childish or childlike behaviors, like we hear in this clip of David and Alexis Rose from the sitcom Schitt's Creek.
Someone keeps eating my yogurt!
What kind of yogurt?
I was saving that for after my run, David!
Oh my god, I guess I was saving it for during your run then.
Many people witness the phenomenon, but what does research tell us about sibling bonds and their effects once we're grown? In April, I had the chance to talk with Megan Gilligan about adult sibling relationships and their impact at various stages of adulthood. Megan is a professor at the University of Missouri Columbia and the director of the Families in Later Life Lab there. I started our conversation by asking her why there's been so little research until now about siblings once they hit adulthood.
I think it has to do with the history of family relationships and adulthood research in general. So there had been a long emphasis placed on studying romantic relationships and spousal relationships. And then we kind of turned to parent-adult-child relationships and grandparents. And siblings have always kind of trailed behind, maybe because we also assume that siblings are a childhood relationship. So that's something that we have in our parents' home. We interact with each other, but when we become adults, maybe not so much. However, my own research and research of my colleagues show that against that assumption, sibling relationships are often this lifelong tie for many individuals.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the biggest differences, Megan, between sibling relationships in youth and adulthood?
So one of the things that can happen is just the salience or the meaning that relationships take throughout the life course in terms of in childhood, siblings are often navigating that relationship in the context of a parental home. So they may be working out conflict together, but there are also other adults there who are part of that relationship, helping them navigate it. And as we move through the life course and people start to get their own independent families and become adults themselves, then that relationship may take on a different meaning than it did when we were children. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that comes up from my work, for example, is people will ask about age discrepancies in sibling relationships. Certainly an age discrepancy in childhood might feel really big, meaning if you have a sister or brother who's 2, 3, 4, 5 years older than you, that might feel like a big gap in childhood. But in adulthood, as we start to make transitions into the workforce, maybe forming families, romantic relationships, all of a sudden, maybe those differences, particularly I'm thinking in terms of age, don't matter as much in adulthood. So different things kind of impact the sibling relationship as it progresses through the life course.
Mm-hmm. Now, Megan, you were recently part of an NPR series about siblings, and you spoke about the link between close sibling relationships in adulthood and longevity. Talk with us a bit about that.
Yeah, so one of the things that my colleagues and I were interested in is so definitely understanding sibling relationships in adulthood. So we have done work on middle age and old age, individuals in their 60s, 70s. But we were interested in how can we figure out the origins of those relationships and where do they start? So we started looking as early as adolescence and following people into middle age. And we were interested in both the negative and the positive components of those relationships. And so one of the findings from this work is that siblings can have benefits on our psychological well-being are reports of emotional distress, anxiety, depression. And one of the mechanisms in which they have a positive component on our well-being has to do with our feelings of loneliness. And so as we can think about as we go through the life course and maybe make transitions, we might maybe our parents are no longer alive. Maybe we've gone through a divorce. Siblings seem to provide an important source of support in adulthood and decrease feelings of loneliness. So really thinking through that and then having subsequent impacts on our health and well-being. Again, that main mechanism of providing some social support and reducing feelings of loneliness. We also find the opposite. So sibling relationships that are conflictual, tension, which isn't uncommon to have, those can have negative effects on our health and well-being outcomes. So really understanding both of those dynamics and sibling relationships, both the positive and the negative.
What kinds of sibling interactions, Megan, specifically decreased loneliness? So, I mean, are we talking about, you know, phone calls, get-togethers? Were there very concrete things that that you found people mentioning in the course of the research that you were doing?
Yeah, so I would say two things with that. The first is we were focused on what I would refer to as positive dimensions of the relationship. So we asked individuals, and these were individuals in their 60s, particularly in the loneliness research, how often do your siblings make you feel loved and cared for? How often do they make you feel happy? And when people reported that their siblings made them feel that way, they also experienced decreased feelings of loneliness and better psychological well-being outcomes. The other thing that we know from the research is in order to have that type of positive relationship, you do need to have contact. And as opposed to what I was saying earlier, we found that siblings maintain contact even after they leave parental home into their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. Some of that is in person, depending on geographic proximity, but then also using different forms of technology. So telephone, and now we can think about FaceTiming, instant messaging. We're seeing that siblings maintain that type of contact well into their adult life course.
And would you say, because of what happened with the pandemic, maybe that there was an increase in interest in understanding how, you know, sibling relationships in particular contribute to better sort of mental health and well-being sort of outcomes?
Yeah, I think one of the things that came out of the pandemic and just in general, in particularly this emphasis on loneliness. So how do we experience social isolation? Certainly the pandemic kind of amplified that for a lot of people, thinking about how to maintain contact with our social relationships. So definitely sibling research in adulthood had been happening before the pandemic, but subsequent research also showing that those were relationships that were maintained during the pandemic, and we're seeing people maintaining that contact with their siblings after the pandemic as well.
We have a post on X from Molly. Molly writes, I am 39 and lost my brother almost 6 years ago. He was a couple years younger than me, but we were extremely close. To this day, I feel like I'm missing a limb. What was most surprising to me was the loss of shared memories. I had no one to reminisce with anymore. And again, that was Molly on X. Megan, what do you think of what Molly has shared and, you know, how that reflects some of the ways that siblings have a very unique and sort of singular sort of relationship?
Yeah, I really appreciate that experience being shared because it really resonates to the uniqueness of a sibling relationship. So if we think of any of our other interpersonal relationships, friends, romantic partners, even our relationship with our parents, it starts when we are at different developmental stages, but a sibling is one of the unique experiences where we are likely to experience different developmental stages, so childhood together and adolescence together. And I think about the clip you showed at the start from Schitt's Creek, or we see other examples of this in popular culture, is we have gone through decades of experiences with siblings. So versus even our romantic partner, we're not likely to meet them into adulthood. And then maybe that relationship might change. Maybe there's a divorce or there is widowhood. But for many individuals, the sibling relationship is going to be one of the only experiences that you're going to have throughout multiple decades of your life. And so the history there is something that is really hard to think about replacing in a way. So even a good friend, it would, you know, maybe very few people would have a friend that they would have for that duration. But there are lots of folks who have sibling relationships that have duration longer than any other interpersonal tie.
Mm-hmm. Were there other kinds of relationships that came up in your research that kind of, you know, supplied the same kind of emotional support or connection that sibling relationships do?
Yeah, so we have done some work thinking about specifically in adulthood, so middle age. And I want to emphasize that because at different stages, for example, in adolescence, our friends become really important. So at adolescence, maybe we're out seeking outside relationships from our family. In middle age, we find there are a number of salient relationships. One could be, we've done work looking at romantic partners, and we looked also at relationships with individuals' mothers and their siblings. And we found among those three ties, so a spousal partner, a relationship with an older mother, and then with adult siblings, all three of them actually were equally impactful. We looked specifically in terms of tension, so fighting, having arguments, all three predicted out to depressive symptoms. So to note that siblings still play a role in those processes, but then also our other adult relationships also are impactful for our psychological being as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's another memorable scene from the sitcom Schitt's Creek that has Alex and David talking about an incident that remains ingrained in older brother David's mind. And it has to do with some care that was supposed to be taken and was not.
This is about those stupid Tamagotchis?
Actually, it is.
Okay, guys. You left me with six of them, David. Taking care of that many is like a full-time job.
I left you with six adult Tamagotchis in perfect health. Okay, this shouldn't be so hard.
Oh my God, just spit it out, David.
Oh my God, fine.
So, Megan, how much do incidents like these in childhood affect adult sibling dynamics?
I think more often than we might expect. So I'm laughing at the clip because we all think, oh, you know, that's kid stuff. We let that stuff go. But I think in research kind of bears out that we carry those experiences with us. So when we use retrospective data, so when we ask people to think back to their past, they're able to account experiences like you're hearing David and Alexa do in Schitt's Creek of things from their childhood. Also, when we use what we would call prospective data, so when we use data across time, the reports of tension and arguments in adolescence still predict out to psychological being when respondents are in middle age. So the salience of these sibling relationships from earlier in the life course, really, sometimes we use the word linger. They really have a lasting impact on individuals. So even though even a childhood game of taking care of a Tamagotchi, it matters to us when we're younger, and we carry that with us as we get older.
Mm-hmm. And insofar as your research goes, Megan, how much of it involved stories or anecdotes or, you know, qualitative data?
So on different projects, I have done different work that is more survey, where we ask those questions that I'm describing of positive dimensions, closeness, happiness, tension and arguments, disagreements. And then I also have done qualitative work where we have interviewed respondents, sometimes individually, and I've done work where I've interviewed two siblings together, ranging in age, again, from individuals in their early 20s to 60s and 70s. And so what we do notice is different experiences, the shared history that Molly explained, the ability to go back when we collect those interview data of there's these shared memories and perspectives that their siblings are often very happy to talk about. And maybe they have a different memory, maybe they have a different recollection of those events, but they do still share the objective experience. Mm-hmm. So I always find that really interesting is to hear them kind of go back when we've interviewed and done joint interviews together of these kind of lifetime memories, shared experiences that they have with each other.
Mm-hmm. We have Judy, who's calling from St. Louis. Judy, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Oh, thanks. I just wanted to say that I'm from a big family. And, I mean, I have four brothers and four sisters. And two have since died. But throughout all of our lives, there were three siblings who died, two before I was born, one after. I didn't know them. They died as babies, but they have always been in our lives. And I didn't know if anyone else deals with this, but whenever anyone asks, you know, well, how many were in your family? 12. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like it's automatic because, and this is from a young age, you know, we were never allowed to forget about them. You know, they were always there.
Right, right.
So I found that interesting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've since experienced death of my older sister, my oldest sister, my youngest brother. And that's totally different. You know, I know they're not here, but, you know.
So in what ways, Judy, have you, you know, have you kept memories of the siblings who've passed, you know, alive? How are they present with you still?
Still? Wow. We talk about them. Mm. We don't all live in St. Louis. We're all over the place. Mm-hmm. We talk about them. Of my youngest brother and my oldest sister. Now, of the babies, we just recognize them, you know, recognize that, you know, well, yeah, you know, who are they and what are their names?
Right, right.
You know, and when were they born?
And you had said it was 12, Judy, altogether?
There were 12, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, how do people respond? I mean, asking about how many siblings a person has can be sort of a casual icebreaker. Do you tell people 12? What was that?
It can be really intimidating.
Oh, right, right.
Like, really?
Yeah.
You're one of those. Yeah.
Judy, thank you so much for calling and sharing that with us. Megan, okay. One of the things that I've been wondering about, I mean, the size of families is getting mm-hmm. smaller with time. Mm-hmm. What is it that you've observed around that, and how much more or less important maybe sibling relationships are when family size is decreasing the way that it is over time?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And so the majority of individuals in the United States still have siblings, but the number of individuals without siblings is also increasing. And so we're seeing that. One of the things that Judy's comment makes me think about as sibling researchers, we often are limited, that we ask people to report on one sibling experience. So Judy would be asked to report on one of her sibling relationships. And so I'm not sure we've done a great job of documenting the experience of these larger cohorts, certainly the baby boom generation with these larger cohorts of sibling relationships. I have been part of work on that of the baby boom cohort and asking them about their sibling relationships, but then sometimes we'll ask about their sibling relationships as a whole. So what are your relationships like with your siblings? But certainly we know there's variability in those relationships. So what we do know is among those who have siblings now, younger cohorts that have smaller numbers of sibship, still a meaningful relationship with the shared history, but a different experience than going through these larger cohorts that we might have seen in the baby boom, I'm sure. But again, I'm not sure we're able to document it fully because we really focused in on sibling dyad relationships to start with. So I think I think this is a moment where we could study relationships like Judy's family to really understand all of those different dynamics.
Now, something I wanted to make sure that we got to, you know, related to family size, you know, there are people who are having kids more often when they're a little bit older. And then there is the very real situation wherein we have to care for aging parents. How does that affect the relational dynamics between siblings when they're adults?
Yeah, I think that's a really important question, and something I'm really interested in is, you know, that's a task that a lot of siblings are going to have to take on together. And one of the things that we note is that sibling relationships that maybe have a better foundation. Again, not that they don't have conflict or tension with each other, but they're able to navigate that. They're able to work through it. They may encounter the task of providing for care parents in an easier way. And so I think the more that we can get siblings cooperating, working together, the better outcomes we see when they enter what can be an extremely stressful situation, caring for older parents. And we know that we have done work that so sometimes these perceptions of parents' relationships and maybe favoritism and differential treatment, those are really upsetting to sibling relationships, and they get exacerbated in the context of parental care. So I think the more we can think about improving and maximizing and these relationships beforehand, the easier it is to transition into this stressful task that a lot of families, a lot of siblings are going to have to navigate with each other.
And on the whole, I mean, does your research find that caring for aging parents brings siblings together, or does it tend to drive them apart?
One of the things that we're noticing in research right now is for a long time, researchers were really just focused on one caregiver in a family. And so they weren't realizing that there was this kind of network of siblings navigating this together. And so but they were doing it. It's just researchers weren't acknowledging it or weren't looking at it. And so what we see is for most families, they're engaging in this task together. We're noticing phrases emerging like long distance caregiver. So one child is geographically proximate and another child might live far away. But it doesn't mean that they're not involved in some capacity in the care. So I think we as researchers are really focusing in on how do we better understand how siblings are navigating that and how can we help to facilitate that process, because people have been doing this for a long time, but we as researchers weren't capturing that experience. But for most families where there's more than one child, in some capacity, the siblings are working together to try to address older parents' care needs. Some families that goes much better than others. In some families, it is a real struggle. So when we see that, thinking about how can we help that family in that moment? What are programming supports that we can offer? And then moving ahead, again, how can we help to prepare people for that situation earlier?
That was my conversation with University of Missouri Human Development and Family Science Professor Megan Gilligan from earlier this year.
This episode was produced by Elaine Shaw.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.